So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day Roger first published his famous thesaurus.
Then on Tuesday, we say happy birthday, Mr. Potato Head.
On Wednesday, the extraordinary stories of the child soldiers who fought in the American Civil War.
On Thursday, how King James changed the word of God.
And on Friday, what did spam emails look like in 1978?
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Donnelly view system, Diolis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
This episode of For F1's Sake is about the 1999 European Grand Prix. So if you haven't seen it, go watch it on YouTube now. And while you're there, check out the Wonder Channel known as Carfection.
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 Carfection on YouTube is a place to go for anyone who loves cars that are fast, expensive, luxurious, or just plain cool.
Carfection.
And it features the best looking car content anywhere online.
Carfection. Erection. Oh, Carfection. Correction.
Visit youtube.com. Visit youtube.com/Carfection now.
Carfection. I've only got a semi-Carfection.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast that's chosen a race to cover that doesn't require me to say...
Andrea de Cesaris.
Well done.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast that has based its entire ethos on the start procedure at the 1999 European Grand Prix.
Have we started?
I'm in the wrong place on the Zoom chat.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast that's been really tempted to take up smoking lately.
Gitan.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast that's been saying Vettel will retire next year for ages and no one listened to us.
I feel like we've been talking about this for at least a year.
We've been saying next year for like the last 4 years.
Welcome to For Formula One's Sake, the F1 podcast has been running behind closed doors since 2015.
I think the only people that listen to Marshalls.
Oh, yeah, that's true, isn't it?
I'm G Grez, and today from, yes, our houses still, because stay the fuck alert, you twats, the virus hasn't gone away. We are going to talk about the 1999 European Grand Prix. But that's not all. Silly season has started extremely early in 2020, probably because there's arsehole else to do, and there has been some pretty high-profile driver movements. So we'll talk about that as well, and no doubt some other nonsense too. That is all to come. Joining me is a man who has been oiling and grilling and digging. It is Phil Tromans.
Hello, everyone.
Have you set up an OnlyFans account too? Sorry.
No, I've been doing a lot of DIY. Oiled up some furniture that the previous people here left. Teak oiled it, sanded it down, jet washed it, looked great.
Was it made of wood?
It was made of wood.
Okay, good.
Otherwise
that was a bad thing to do.
Rubbing oil into
metal.
It's
a three-piece suite. Wait a minute, for us at home, we're on a Zoom call right now as well, so you can't see this if you're listening to the podcast, but I can see the chair. Is that the chair you're sitting on,
yes.
Phil?
Oh.
They saw you coming. That does not look like 500 quid.
It's 1,000 quid's worth. I got it as a bargain because it's second hand. This is a £1,000 chair from a company that specialises in these particular chairs because they are so sought after. If you can find me one cheaper, I'll be very impressed.
Specialises in...
What, a chair?
No, not a chair. This specific
IKEA.
Chair. This specific Herman Miller Aeron. Anyway, I've had enough of spending big money on stuff like that. So this week I bought a barbecue and I've been barbecuing myself senseless.
How much was your barbecue?
It's £500. But it's amazing how much money you can save when you're not commuting into London every day on the bloody trains.
You've been saving money commuting, but me and Chica this week have both saved £500 on barbecues.
well done. But you haven't had the steaks and burgers that I've been enjoying.
And alongside him is less of a man than he was last time. It's Terry Saunders.
Is that who that is?
Okay, look, I did a thing at the weekend. I was alone in the flat, and my beard has been getting very long, so I decided to give it a trim. And I've done this before. I just kept trimming until basically.
Do you usually trim your beard yourself, or do you go to a professional?
I go to a professional. I get a haircut and a beard. It's what Phil spends on barbecues and chairs and weird things with his bike. I spend on beard trims and haircuts in a place I've been going before lockdown. I was going to this like Turkish barbers, and they sit you forward and dip your face in a sink.
Is that where they put the hot cloth in your face?
Yeah, the hot cloth that set fire to your ears. I don't know. It just hurts a bit because it's really hot. The Turkish people are a hairy bunch. Is that, can I say that? Is that
true? That's probably fine.
On the whole, they're hairy. And I think over the millennia, they've really developed ways to get rid of hair. And they're the best in the business.
They are very good. Between that and that and Turnator Istanbul, they've really got it down.
That's what made Turnator so great, was all the hot cloths. But the problem is, and this is the problem I have every time I shave my beard off, which I think averages out at about once every 2 years, is that my face...
Yeah, because you've definitely done it before.
Yeah.
When we went to that that posh RAC...
Oh, Motorsport Hall of Fame, yeah.
For Hollywood, yeah.
Yeah. And what happened is...
Hollywood seen your chin.
Hollywood Walk of Fame.
He saw my chin. And my chin is low down as my beard suggests. Yes, so my face looks very round and not how my face normally looks. So I've been going through old photos on my phone to try and work out how long the beard takes. And I think I've got a good 2 months to be back to normal, maybe three to be kind of proper.
I mean, you are kind of blessed in the fact that you can grow your beard that much in 2 months, because I mean, I now have the only beard of the crew, and this is probably 4 or 5 months worth.
Because
I'm not a hairy
man. Why don't you
shave
it tonight when I have a race?
No, you will annihilate me. It's taken me 5 months to get this much.
Look at that. That's an absolute masterpiece. That's taken him... Look at it. He's so proud. You've stroked it.
I mean,
almost non-stop.
In fairness, I've only really got it because what's the point of shaving? Like, I'm not going anywhere. Same reason I haven't had a haircut, which is why I'm wearing a hat.
Well, you've got to look good for your barbecue.
Well, that's true. And I do, because it's very shiny and I can see my face in it. Anyway, Chica, what have you spent money on? You haven't got a beard either. Did you shave your beard off?
Just only when Matt mentioned we were doing it on Zoom, I rushed to the toilet. So I have been seeing human beings because I am a UK voluntary service respondent.
Ooh.
So basically, for the last month or so, I've been a UK voluntary service responder, and it's been frankly a joke.
Oh.
I have been... Ooh. So basically, they make out that you're some sort of hero. Basically, you do someone shopping for them, which is fine. I've been sent to the A13 to go and pick up someone shopping. But there's just a spot on the map, and you're just sat there looking at the A13 like, I mean, there's something wrong.
Where's
here.
The shopping?
Because this person is dead if they're there. And various other things like going to someone's house and then being like, I mean, I requested it a week ago, but thank you. Anyway, so when they want you, they sound an alarm. Now, the alarm doesn't correlate with the importance of what you're doing, because you are essentially going to go and buy someone a loaf of bread. The alarm is like an air raid siren. Now, I'd been listening to a podcast in the toilet. And so the podcast was linked up to the speaker in the bathroom. So the siren went off in the bathroom, and I was like, ah, so the siren, and I was like, shit. Anyway, so looked at my phone, and a guy on the map needed his responder, and that was me. So I went there to help him out, the man in need. And so I went to this flat, and... the local, it had one of the council guys had to help let me in, because it was kind of, it was really difficult to get to. And eventually I got into this guy's flat, and he said to me, got to the door, and I said, hi, you know, can I help you, etc. And he said, yeah, I need help with my shopping. Can you get me a packet of 40 Marlboros? Anyway, and as I was undoing my bike, I heard behind me him say, "Oh, don't worry about it, I'm going," as he was walking to the shop.
Wow. So you've been volunteering for lazy people, is what you're saying.
Vulnerable, isolated, was just wandering to the shop to go and buy his own cigarettes. I think
that's me clapping you,
yeah.
Thank you.
You're a hero.
Right, listeners' corner, and all of you over on our Facebook page are waffling big style about the driver changes announced for 2021. Sebastian Vettel will be leaving Ferrari at the end of this year to be replaced by Carlos Sainz, who is moving from McLaren. Lee Marsh Horgan says Vettel throws toys from pram, having been upstaged by younger teammate. Shock. Ian Martin says Sainz will be a good number two at Ferrari. Vettel has had his day. Kevin Barry might not be too hopeful for Sainz's chances of success at Maranello. He says Ferrari, where careers go to die. But Ross Chaplin wonders, could Ferrari actually be good now? If they actually build around Charles, they might actually get their shit together. Why is Vettel leaving?
Well, the main reason he's leaving is because Ferrari have said, you're not the number one driver anymore. They may not have actually said, you've got to be number two to Leclerc, but I think they've gone, you know, you're going to have to take a pay cut and you're going to be equal stats with that over there. And Vettel, in my opinion, rightly said, get fucked. Because there's no way you can't. He couldn't carry on at a kind of equal status when you're a four-time world champion. No.
I mean, counterpoint, there's a suggestion that you're only as good as your last season. And last season, Leclerc trounced Vettel. Why should Vettel now... Should it be like Ferrari's legacy F1 payments where they just get more because they're Ferrari? Should he just get more because he's Vettel, even though he's not as good as the de facto number one driver?
Well, if he'd have been wiser, he'd have vetoed his contract for a start. No, I agree with you. There's no... this is why he's left. There's no way that he can still be number one, but there's also no way that he can be equal status with Leclerc.
Is it a pride thing, do you think? He couldn't just go, yeah, fair enough. He's obviously quicker than me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but it's not just pride, is it? Has there ever been another driver that's gone from lead driver to equal status driver? And it's
the one
out?
That's...
It's no. Because of pride, because nobody wants to do that.
The one where it's worked out, no. What jumped to mind was Lauda at Ferrari? No, McLaren. Was it Ferrari or McLaren when Prost came in and was a bit shaky in the first season, but then by the time he'd learned from Lauda to be a bit clever, he was obviously much faster and Lauda went, okay, I'll retire. This is pretty much the same because I think Vettel's going to retire now. Because where can he go, really? Where will his pride let him go? Renault? I don't think so.
Well, Renault, no way. Mercedes, unlikely.
No.
Can't really see that.
And he'll get trounced by Hamilton because Hamilton's not going anywhere.
Yeah. The only option, I think, is wild card, but Aston Martin.
I mean, that is...
as a kind of...
That is an outside thing. But then doesn't Perez already have a contract for quite a while? And there's no way that Stroll's not going to have that seat, is he? Lawrence Stroll turns round to Lance and said, sorry, son, you're out because we've got Sebastian Vettel. I mean, that would be brilliant.
Counterpoint, Lawrence Stroll seems like exactly the kind of person who would fire his son to get a four-time world champion in his car.
I mean, you might be right, I suppose. I can't see it
happening. But it'd be like it'd be like a kind of project thing, wouldn't it? It'd be like, you're not going to be a champion, but you've got two or three years of good money to build up this team from,
I mean, it's
being Racing Point to being...
But he couldn't do that at Ferrari, and Aston Martin don't have Ferrari money. Racing Point don't have Ferrari
money. No, they've got Tommy Hilfiger money.
Is anyone buying Tommy Hilfiger anymore?
I won't stand up because then you'll see my Tommy Hilfiger sweatpants. No, I haven't got any. I've never owned any Tommy Hilfiger.
I think he's realised the writing's on the wall. He's done pretty well. He's a family man. He doesn't need the publicity. He doesn't need the cash. I think he'll do a Rosberg and retire. And we probably won't hear much from him again. And I think he'll be perfectly happy.
Yep.
And, you know, good luck to him. I think he's, you know, he's one of those drivers. He's a very good driver. He's not quite top, top, top tier. But he got himself in a good team for a long time. Got four world championships out of it. Chanced his arm at Ferrari, wasn't quite good enough. Did all right, but, you know, wave him goodbye, pat on the back, next. And that next will be Carlos Sainz. What do you think of that?
Well, I would say to reiterate what Kevin said in the comments there, where careers go to die, because Vettel died, Alonso, his career died, Prost even. I mean, he had a bit of a resurgence, but Prost got, he got binned from Ferrari, didn't he? And I think Sainz will be one of those drivers that in about 5 or 10 years, when you see a clip of the 2021 season, you'll go, did Sainz drive for Ferrari? One of those. like Mika Salo.
Yes. Well, yeah. Well,
or even John Alesi a little bit.
Well, Salo was only there because Schumacher broke his leg, wasn't he? But
true.
I think Ian Martin's got it right when he says he'll be a good number two. I think he'll be a good number two. I don't think he's brilliant. I think he's a solid driver, but I mean, he was being on the verge of being shown up by Norris. He got given the boot from Red Bull, didn't he? He's been jumping around teams a bit.
Someone's pointed out that he's followed Alonso's career exactly, in that he went from Toro Rosso, which was Minardi, to Renault, to McLaren, to Ferrari.
So we can expect him to have a crack at the Indy 500 next year, and then start a shitty clothing company.
I reckon he could be a presenter.
He's quite charming.
Yeah.
It's his cousin. Remember, we talked in the last episode about his cousin, though. Now his cousin's got bitty big bollocks. You know, he's going to be there at Ferrari with his red shirt on, speaking
in the background,
Spanish.
Going, fuck! I think Sainz, I think to Ross's point, could they actually be good now? From a driver point of view, yeah, this is probably a pretty good lineup. I think Leclerc is, I think even Sainz would concede that Leclerc's better than him. At least he will.
Counterpoint. I just like saying counterpoint. Now, everyone's sucking on the altar of Charles Leclerc is amazing, because it's a new phrase I just made up, sucking on the altar. It's like drinking at the altar and sucking on the cock. So it's locked. I've been on my own for a while. So all I've got here is an altar. So what I would say is Leclerc. He's going to be in a very different position. I mean, we're obviously talking about next year, not this year. But he's going to be in a very difficult position, because at the minute, he's number two to Vettel, and he's got that kind of underdog release where he can just be the kind of new guy who has a go at the big dog, and he can win races and get stuff like that. But he did make a bunch of screw-ups last year, but you didn't really mind, because he was just like, you know, he's doing well. It's his first year at Ferrari. I think he's going to buckle. I think when he's in charge of that, he's going to
No,
buckle.
I think he is. I think he's now got two seasons of F1 under his belt, and he's been doing a lot of esports racing, and he's been doing very well. And I think he's learned from his mistakes. I think he's... I've drawn this parallel with people before, but Marc Marquez in MotoGP, when he came in, was ludicrously fast but fell off every other race. And that's sort of what Leclerc did. But then Marquez got his act together and basically won every world championship for about 20 years. And I think Leclerc, if the car's good enough, could do the same again. I think the fundamental problem that Ferrari have going forward will be Ferrari. I think they'll be the one that will balls it up somehow.
And Terry, do you reckon that it would be the pressure that would just get to him?
I think the pressure, and I think he's just going to get... I mean, he's already a bit big-headed anyway with his kind of angry stuff on the radio going, hey, you should do what I say, all this kind of stuff. And that's when he's like, you know, the young upstart. When he's the big guy, I think he's going to be unbearable. I think the team are going to start to hate him. It's all going to fall apart. And in a couple of years, we'll be doing a podcast about, oh, well, another career went to die. Where's Leclerc going to go now? He's off to Red Bull or whatever. So, yeah, it's not going to happen. They're not going to win a championship. That's a given.
No, that we agree.
The last time I won a championship was when Kimi Raikkonen backed over the line by mistake and won it. And then before that, it was Schumacher. So, you know, there's no way. They're never going to win again.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter, does it?
We're now at the point in history where driving for Ferrari is just about, you know, because you like the colour red, not because you want to win a championship.
But there is an interesting question in, should Sainz stay at McLaren as a lead driver or go to another team as a number two?
What would you do?
He's much more likely to
stay at McLaren.
See, I think he's much more likely to... I think he'll do better at Ferrari. If you were going to put money on Sainz winning a race in a McLaren or Sainz winning a race in a Ferrari, I'd put money on him winning a race in a Ferrari. It'll probably be when Mercedes mess up. or Leclerc's messed up somehow.
And
or Ferrari have messed up a pit stop and Leclerc's had spent, you know, 50 seconds in the pit. But he's more likely to get podiums and wins.
But if you think about it, so at the minute, if the order kind of stays the same, the top three teams, Ferrari, Red Bull and Mercedes, they're going to come top six in most races. And, you know, as the number two driver, you're going to probably come fourth, fifth or sixth. And on a bad day, if you finish, you'll come sixth kind of thing. Whereas on a good day in McLaren, he can finish sixth. So I think he'll just end up finishing sixth.
Well, we'll see. Or will we? We'll get to that later.
So naturally, Sainz's departure from McLaren means that there's a seat going over Woking Way. But who is going to be filling it? Why, it's Daniel Ricciardo, proving that the love affair with Renault was merely a short and unsatisfying fling. But who will fill that spare Renault seat alongside Esteban Ocon? So Craig Howard says, Hulk, back to Renault. John Gardner says, surely this opens a door for Hamilton at Renault. Let's face it, they're used to spending a shitload on Ricciardo, so they can probably afford him. Charles Moussard says, is Fernando going to Renault just to shaft Seb in payback for his Ferrari exit? What do you think?
Right. Well, Ricciardo then. From Renault to McLaren. Sideways step? Forward step?
Any step.
I mean, it's a slight forward. Yeah, it's a slight forward step. It's kind of, it's a trip, if anything, isn't it? It's kind of like, he's ended up on his face.
Is he getting paid less?
Probably.
He must be.
I don't think, because
he was...
We'll hear later that McLaren's not got loads of cash at the moment, and he was on a stonking amount of money at Renault. Mm. So he's probably just banked that for how long was he there? It was only a year, wasn't it? Or no, it'll be 2 years by the time he goes there.
Well, it'll be 2 years with this...
One year of actually driving. So he's probably just banked that and gone, I don't need to worry about the money anymore. Now I'll go somewhere where they're not all twats and I might actually get somewhere.
But still, this is a bit embarrassing, isn't it, for him? He's left Red Bull, he's gone to Renault, and it was...
I mean, it's...
Renault, Cyril de Bitterbull is a snake oil salesman, because like, he's just this whole kind of like, come here and we'll win races, we're going to... Because don't forget, was it this year or last year they were supposed to win the championship according to their self-aggrandizing plan? And they've got no chance. They keep swapping around. Like this year... They've got new designers designing the car, but they can't start until now or something because they're on gardening leave. So they got a whole new crew in again. It's a total mess. I know we've got no chance of doing anything. The parent company are probably going to pull out anyway. So I think it's the perfect place for Alonso. But it's just embarrassing because, you know, he left Red Bull because he thought Honda were going to be shit, which, to be fair, seemed like a fair bet. But Honda turned it around. Then he had a choice of Renault and McLaren. He went for Renault because he thought they had a better bet, and he was wrong. Is Ricciardo the next generation Alonso of making the wrong move every time?
Maybe, but I don't think he's pissing off quite as many people. Although, having said that, did you see the press release from Renault when he announced he was going? It was...
No.
Oh, my word.
It was the Frenchest thing I've ever seen.
It was the most passive aggressive.
Stubbing out a jeton on a croissant and saying, fuck off.
It was basically something like, it didn't say anything like, you know, we thank Daniel for his service and look forward to, you know, working with him for the rest of the season and seeing what results we can get and, you know, wishing the best of luck in his career. It was more like, now more than ever, we value loyalty. There was no reference to thanking him at all. It was basically just
loyalty
like,
from
fucking Cyril
Abitabal. From that team from that team who dumpster like anything. Ask Nico Hülkenberg about loyalty. Yeah. Ask Palmer about loyalty. Ask who else has been driving there lately? Who did
Magnussen?
Who did Ricciardo? Magnussen? Yeah, he got dropped. They just dropped drivers like it's
if
going
it
out
if
of
it wasn't for Red, if it that, wasn't for Toro Rosso and Red Bull, they'd be by far the worst on the grid for that kind of thing. So yeah, it was a bit rich from Renault, but I think Ricciardo. It is a bit embarrassing for him because. I think a lot of people, when he went to Renault, were like, and they've been proved right. But I think at McLaren, he's going to be probably happier, if not as well paid, and probably just as good a chance of getting a reasonable result. And it'll be interesting to see how he gets on against Norris.
But he's still he left Red Bull, so it's still a mistake. He's still sitting watching his old team.
Well, yeah,
winning.
But then again, it's the whole thing of like he was never going to be as good as Verstappen, wasn't he? So unless he could come up with some clever ways around it,
yeah, what's the point?
Then there wasn't much point in staying there either. But anyway, but as to who will take his seat at Renault, let's go through him. Hülkenberg. Would he want to go back?
I think Hülkenberg...
Would they want him back?
He'll go back because it's a Formula One drive. They'll want him back because they appreciate loyalty, apparently. I think it's the sensiblest option is to have Hülkenberg back.
Yeah.
So we can not get a podium again.
But just to entertain the other ideas, Hamilton? Never going to happen.
That's not good. That's a silly comment.
Why would Hamilton go there? It's not like... Oh, no, he's not. He doesn't need any money. I mean, Hamilton's got more money than anybody. Fernando... I can't see it.
It's going to happen, isn't it? It's going to happen.
You reckon? Part of me thinks maybe, but then the other part of me thinks, well, didn't he leave because he wasn't in a car that could win? And look at Renault's track.
Yeah, but now he's in the dying stages of his career. Another year goes by, he's never going to get back on the grid. He had success with Renault. They love loyalty. And I can't imagine anything better than Fernando going back to Renault and having... all of his final year in Formula One, just seeing Ferraris ahead of him, McLaren's ahead of him, the Toro Rosso ahead of him, or an AlphaTauri, whatever it is. All of his old teams will just finish ahead of him, and then it will just be another year of Alonso ranting and memes.
Of course, another probably cheaper option would be Guangho Zhu. The Formula 2 driver, I think, is like their test driver or something like that, because he looks like he's quite good.
He's one of the young drivers, isn't he?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, he's one of the Renault young drivers.
Because he'll be cheap, and they can probably boss him around. Yeah. And Ocon can be the number one, and he can be the new rookie upstart, and see how that goes. I don't know how likely that means, is, but that would seem the obvious choice.
But Ocon's a bit of a feisty driver. He's had a year out. Would you want him... I mean, I guess it's not a year out, technically, because he should be in it this year, shouldn't he? So if this year happens... Yeah. No, it'll be all right.
I mean, at this point, I wonder if, can beggars be choosers if you're Renault? Because they just seem to keep pissing off drivers. And, the more I hear about Cyril Abitbol, the more I think he's a bit of a petulant man.
I mean, surely he's got to go. Surely he can't have long
He
left.
Seems like, the weak link.
He has sailed over a period of shite.
He has a little bit, yeah. Meh, we'll wait and see.
So in other news, when will we actually get some racing? So unofficially, the current plan seems to be the 5th of July at the Red Bull Ring in Austria and then the 12th of July at the Red Bull Ring in Austria. This could be the start of several doubleheaders with two British Grand Prix planned for the 26th of July and the 2nd of August. Hungary looks like it will happen, but Singapore looks less likely. And then emphasis on the word could... be three more double races at Barcelona, Spa and Monza, then trips to Baku and Sochi. Hockenheim has been drafted in as a sub if one of these can't happen. Then we're looking at another double race in Bahrain and then Abu Dhabi. Of course, this may all have changed by the time you listen to this.
It's the classic calendar, isn't it? Austria, Britain, Singapore, maybe Hungary, Barcelona.
Double races, how boring would that be?
Well... fairly.
It does feel like someone went to print the calendar and they put two copies instead. I'll just go with it.
It's a bit desperate, isn't it?
My favourite thing about this is, I mean, it's terrible, but older listeners might remember in, I think, the 90s, Brands Hatch and Donington, and maybe even Silverstone at some point, were both... There were two Grand Prix in Britain in a year, and the second one was called the European Grand Prix.
Oh, it's the 93...
So I believe...
The 93 Donington race, yeah, that was European.
Yeah. So I really hope, what with, Brexit going on, that there's a lovely bit of trolling that the FIA have a British Grand Prix at Silverstone and the following week a European Grand Prix at Silverstone.
But if we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, possibly 6 double headers... are they going to do that with every single one? They're going to have the Bahrain Grand Prix and then the Middle East Grand Prix and then the Barcelona Grand Prix and then the Catalan Grand Prix and the Spanish Grand Prix, the Belgian Grand Prix and the Benelux Grand Prix and the Italian Grand Prix and the Aegean Grand Prix? I don't know. I mean, I like Austria, I like Spa, I like Monza. So, yeah, okay, fine. Two races there could be interesting, especially if the weather changes at them. But it seems that it's just a bit desperate, isn't it?
I mean, yes, because there's a global pandemic that's fucking the world. So it is a little desperate by default. You know, that is actually what's happening here. But I think as long as they do some kind of... I think they're missing a trick. All right, what they should be doing is having the same track, but just changing the country. So, you know, just have different flags up. And so they have the 5th of July race at the Red Bull Ring in Austria. And the 12th of July, they have the Red Bull race in Morocco. And it's just got like Moroccan flags up.
Snow.
Yeah, they just like dress the place up as if it's like themed or something.
Yeah.
You know, when you're at an airport and you get that thing where you kind of land and you're in a different country than what you're in because it's customs. And you're like, you know, when you go through customs, you're in that.
You know, no man's land.
Uh-huh. So like you're, uh-huh. Yeah. No, so you're like there's a bit, if you land in Canada because you're changing planes to go to America, even though you're in Canada, that little bit of the airport you're in is legally America because you've had your passport checked and it's like a weird thing. So they should do that with it. So they should, for a weekend, make that small area of Austria part of Morocco.
So they should do it in airside at Vienna Airport, is what you're saying. Just race the cars Vienna Airport.
Or just in Vienna, yeah.
I mean, there's that.
I mean, I'm not for that.
They make the Red Bull Ring for a weekend Moroccan. So it becomes the Morocco.
So Morocco annexes part of Spielberg.
I mean, hopefully they'll give it back, but these are details. That's for the lawyers to sort out. You know, we could have...
See,
we could have
you're not changing anything apart from the legality.
Put some flags up. Flags up and the food will be nicer.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I mean,
do you not want to change the weather though? Because I really want to change the weather. Like, could you not put some wind machines on and like?
So my idea is ludicrous, but changing the weather, cheek.
Well, it's not the first time that the sprinkler idea has come up, and I don't think it's not the only time in this podcast.
In Morocco, though, it's not going to rain in Morocco.
We need a sun machine in Spielberg.
And you could have like wind machines.
Just a massive fan on the back straight. See if you can blow people off the track. Yeah, all right, at this point, why not? I mean, I've heard people say, this season's all up the creek. Let's try all the wacky ideas. Let's get Bernie back. Bring out his little red book of stupid ideas. And, you know, let's give all the drivers medals. Let's get the sprinklers on. What else did he come up with? All sorts of stupid other things.
Reverse grids.
Yeah, reverse grid, reverse track.
Qualifying point.
Yeah, Joker laps.
Sprint races.
Yeah. I'm up for it. Let's do it.
If I'd seen the film Joker, I could have done a good joke there about that, but I haven't seen it, so I don't have any references to hand.
So once we do get going this year, you can forget about such excitement as what tyres the teams have chosen. Pirelli looks set to axe that riveting part of the weekend. Surely the highlight for many, and just give the team some tyres and tell them to get on with it.
Well, from what I can tell, it seems like Pirelli has made a fuck ton of tyres and doesn't want to keep making loads of tyres that a load of teams might not choose for the races that may or may not happen. Because it's something like a month and a half in advance or something. They have to choose their tyres for each race, isn't it? And when you don't... When you don't know where they're going to go or when, that's going to be a bit difficult for Pirelli to just be waiting next to the tyre machine going...
Yeah, but tyres don't go off.
No, but the fact that they must throw away so many tyres, or they have a long time to make the tyres that the teams have ordered. Whereas with all this nonsense going on, it's probably going to be like, it's going to be one of these things like, I've just been watching Race Around the World on TV, where they get to somewhere and they open an envelope and it says, you're going to Baku. And they're like, all right, let's go to Baku quickly. I imagine it's going to be like that. The teams are going to have like 2 weeks' notice, and that's not going to be enough time for Pirelli to make all the tyres. So they're just saying, look, we're going to make some tyres, we're going to give you them, you're going to be happy with them, and that's how it's going. And I will be surprised if...
That will make it more interesting.
I think that they should do that anyway. I mean, otherwise... I mean, is there anybody who really watches F1 and goes, oh, I wonder what team the tyres have chosen... what tyres the teams have chosen in advance?
People will.
No, what am I talking about? It's F1, of course. Jonathan Palmer. Of course, people will, sorry. But...
But I think take it a step further and make it like the lottery... So what happens is when the car comes into the pit stop, they've got one of those machines, like the lottery machines, and four tyres come out. And they could be anything. They could be wet, they could be soft tyres, they could be used tyres, they could be tyres off a Renault Clio, and they've just got to bolt those four tyres on and get off.
Will they all be identical tyres? Will it be a set, or will it just be individual tyres?
No, it could be like a fruit machine, a set, you win some money. So, you know, you can't have a set every time. So, it's
so
like,
sometimes you might get like one wet, one hard, one super soft and an intermediate. Yeah.
That'll sort the men from the boys.
Who can drive their way around that? Brilliant. Great idea.
Especially if it's just driving on the left-hand side of the track.
So moving into next year, we finally look like we're getting the budget cap that the sport has been trying to implement for a billion years. Nothing like a crippling global dive in the economy to make you think, maybe we'd better save some cash. The magic number being bandied around is $145 million per year for every team, starting from next year and dropping every year after that. Although that figure doesn't include marketing, driver fees, the wages of the team's three highest paid personnel, employee bonuses, championship entry fees, engine supply deal, travel and hotels, purchase of super licenses or non-F1 activities. But hey, they won't cost much. Anyway, all that needs to happen now is for the teams to vote on the idea.
So then,
what's non-F1 activities? Is that a prostitute?
Yeah, probably. I was going to say that. Definitely.
Awful lot of prostitutes.
That's like fruit and flowers.
Strippers.
Fruit, flowers and prostitutes.
Look, I think they haven't gone far enough. It's 145 million a year, but it's going down every year. And they're quibbling right now on how much it goes down. I think it should go down 20 million a year, every year, until it hits nothing. And then that will be a stonking Formula One season when all they've got is the three highest paid personnel and some drivers. What's this thing with the three highest paid license? Personnel? Super license is what all the drivers need. So I don't know, they buy them. Is that right?
Oh,
well,
right.
I think you have to earn the right to buy them, but I can't imagine they're cheap. I'm going to Google it now. But yeah, you know that it's not just sort of you get a load of points and then they give you your super license. Like, you must have to pay for
no,
it.
No, I suppose.
How much
like
does
a £39 fee
license cost? Okay, so in 2009, Hamilton had to pay €218,920 for his license fee for the year.
Jesus.
So, it's expensive. So that's none of that's covered.
ff1s.com/
Super license.
So, yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot more expenses. I mean, that's a lot of expenses right there in those exceptions. And also remember, it wasn't that long ago that they were saying, $40 million a year, that'll be fine. And now it's more than three times that.
Speaking of saving cash, McLaren is considering mortgaging its HQ and some heritage cars in a bid to save some cash. The team reckons it can make £275 million from doing that. In a similar move to that made by Williams, which has taken a loan from Michael Latifi, dad of Nicholas, using its factory and heritage fleet as collateral.
Well, this all bodes well, doesn't it? For Ricardo, going to McLaren. Mm. He turns up and there's just sort of bailiffs taking away, you know, Senna's MP4/4.
So they're a very friendly bunch.
I mean, nobody's got any money. That's the trouble at the moment, apart from Ferrari and Mercedes.
The mortgaging thing, I'd quite like the mortgaging thing, because what could happen is you could have one of those kind of Sky F1 pieces where they go around interviewing your Ricardo or your Norris and they're going around the McLaren factory and you've got all these old cars and everything. If they've had to mortgage part of it, wouldn't it be great if there was just some like chavvy family in a semi-detached house at the end of on the edge of that lake? Just this kind of, just a bunch of chavs going in a swimming, you know, they're just swimming in the lake going, right, we bought this house. Not a funny joke, sorry. I thought that was going to be funnier, but no.
We can just pretend you cut out.
It's, you know, I hope that it works for them and they manage to keep enough money to keep going again, because now they're in debt to people. Williams are in debt to Michael Latifi. McLaren are going to be in debt to, I don't know, Dave, whoever they borrow money from. If they can't get this ship back on track, that's a thing, shut up, then it could be problematic. So let's hope that F1 gets going and that McLaren and Williams start winning races.
If they don't have to sell the old cars, could they just bring them to the races and use them? Because I, for one, would like to see, like, Ricardo in an MP44 racing and Silverstone, because the second week we're aboard shit.
That could work. Get Latifi in the FW14B. Be up for that.
Just have them all out. Yeah, do it.
Tell us how wrong we are. You can tweet us at For F1's Sake or find us on Facebook where we're For F1's Sake or email us at wrong@ff1s.com. And thank you to all the people who have donated since learning of my impending wedding and Phil's chair.
And barbecue. Yeah.
And turbo trainer.
Paul Hinton and James Caswell.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks very much.
Both of you.
Very much.
You are guests.
Yeah.
And to our regular donors, Christopher Lee.
Not that one, but thank you.
Paul Hewings.
Top man.
Well done, Paul.
Donald Griffin.
The finest of all the mythical beasts.
Charlie Fraser.
Fraser.
I didn't hear what you said then, Terry.
We got his razor.
I just said Fraser, like the sitcom. I'm just saying sitcom, though.
Yeah, but you cut out.
It's like you just said razor, and there you were with no beard.
You know, Razy, Charlie Razor Fraser. He's an old,
yeah,
one of the old East End lads.
Razor Fraser is a solid nickname.
Yeah,
thank you, Razor.
Keith Falconer.
Oh.
Razor.
Falconer, the man with
his
the falcon.
His nickname's also Razor.
No, he's the Birdman.
Ooh, nice.
Jenny and Ralph Brynard.
Brynard.
Have a couple given us some money? That's nice.
We're a family-friendly show.
Thanks, guys.
Or do you think that's just they've set up their PayPal or whatever as a kind of... It's like when you ring... someone and the voicemail is the family, but you're actually just ringing the
it's
one.
It's probably
person.
Ralph, isn't it? Thank you, Ralph.
I reckon.
Is Jenny aware of her donation? Can we just get Jenny or Ralph, whoever's listening? Are you both in on this? I want to check.
No, I think Ralph's got no idea.
Is this going to cause problems between Jenny and Ralph? I feel really bad now.
Is this some kind of money laundering scam?
Bryce Davies.
Bryce the Razor.
And Paul Hinton.
Hang on. So Paul's a regular donor and he's donated separately as well. Paul, you've got too much money, but thank you for giving it to us.
Beautiful South royalties.
It's not the same
I've
guy.
I've got to do it every week
it's
now.
It's not the same guy.
No, one of them's Paul Hinton and the other one's Paul Heaton.
Well, the woman's Paul Hinton.
But if you want to encourage us to make more of these lockdown bonus shows, buy us a pint, a tinny that we can buy from Sainsbury's. And where can you donate this money, Terry?
Well, unfortunately, our normal website address has been shut down due to the lockdowns, but we furloughed a new address at www.ff1s.com/tin-tin-tin.
That's not true, is it? You're not going to set that up, are you?
Of course I'm not.
Pint, pint, pint.
In just a moment, we'll look back through the teams at the 1999 European Grand Prix. But first, a few observations from you lot. Tristan Clayton says, remember this race well. Season wrecking for multiple drivers. Irvine, Fredson, and most heartbreaking of all, Luca Badoa in his fourth place, Minardi. Nick Bromyard says, at 1:18, Murray suggests a controlled sprinkler system to make races wet. Sounds kind of familiar. Anthony Bishop said, safety or complete lack of it is the most striking thing watching these old races. Stephen Miles says, Ferrari pit stop fuck-ups is the same in 99 as now. For Ben Turnbull, the nostalgia was just too much. Beer with alcohol in it, tobacco sponsorship, single-use drink bottles, use as much fuel as you like. I couldn't watch it.
I can't fucking stand watching anything on telly anymore.
Yeah, crowds. Remember them?
Yeah.
So intimate.
The podium ceremony. Get a stand apart. You're going to all catch it.
It was a good one.
Stuart Ford. The team that is now Red Bull don't bother to do anything for the first 40 laps, and an inspired run on the wet tyres meant that Johnny Herbert was there waiting for the inevitable win. Were they good or was everyone else shit?
Yes. I would say. A combination of the two.
Well, sorry, what are you answering? Were they good or was everyone else shit?
Yes. They were good and everyone else was shit. If everyone else wasn't shit, they wouldn't have come anywhere near it because they'd ballsed up qualifying and were starting, were they 14th, 15th? Mm-hmm. But because everyone else was shit, they were there not being shit.
Honestly, I watched this race and I couldn't remember. I just clicked the YouTube link, didn't look up what it was or anything. And after the first couple of laps, I was thinking, is this the one where the Stewart won its first race? But then thought, it can't be that, because they've not been in the Grand Prix. Like half an hour in, you've not even seen a Stewart in the whole thing. It was just like, well, it can't be that race, because I must have got the wrong year. This must have been when they were still... Who were they before? Tyrrell. No, not Tyrrell.
Well, they weren't anybody, were they? They were just Stewart. Didn't Jackie start them from nothing?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
But no, it was that. Because they cocked up on the tyres, hadn't they, during qualifying? And they were way down on actually how quick they probably could have been. But I don't think even then nobody was like, yeah, they're going to win. I mean, as we'll discuss, everything happened to everybody else. And they were there doing pretty well. And then the rain came down and Herbert was pretty lucky to be on the right tyres at the right time. And fair play to him, drove pretty well. And yeah, what a lovely moment. Jackie Stewart on the podium. Lovely. Johnny Herbert on the podium.
What trousers.
Nice.
Yeah, and Rubens Barrichello was there as well. And I don't remember much about what he did at all. Because at one point they were thinking it might have been a 1-2 for them, but then it wasn't.
And I looked up, because I think I'm right in saying that Barrichello had got a couple of podiums for Stewart that year. So he was like the one who was going to get the first win. It was that kind of thing of like, if it carries on going like this. And on the day he was just kind of, well, not nowhere, he was like fourth, wasn't he? But, you know, nowhere in this glory scheme.
Yeah, I mean, it should have been a 1-2 because Barrichello was all over Trulli at the end. But, you know, good old Nürburgring. You can't pass in F1, that's the trouble. Mm. Thank God, that was back in 1999. Thank God they've had 21 years to sort that out.
It's a shit sport, isn't it? I mean, let's face it. The problem with watching old races is... They put these ones on YouTube that are like the good ones of a season. And yeah, this was a good race with lots happening. But on the whole, you just get that bit of watching a 2-hour replay of a 20-year-old race and going, some of this is boring. And this is a good race. Some of the races that year would have been as dull as the races this year, because often Formula One is shit.
It was the weather that helped make this one and the fact that everybody kept crashing.
Prost Peugeot. Prost used to be Ligier. And in 1999, almost looked like they might be able to be a real grown-up team. But the decline was sharp, and unlike the most teams that are around with a different name, these Frenchies don't exist anywhere anymore.
I remember the Prost. You remember the Prost? They were led by that guy. What was his name?
Ayrton Senna.
That's the chap. Because
the thing is, if you ask me before this, what happened to Prost? And I was like, well, actually, Prost, he got his own team, he bought Ligier, and it was a total disaster. And then you watch a race like this where, you know, they were up there and got the podium and were there on kind of on the merit of all the other cars screwing up, maybe. But, yeah, they were all right.
Yeah, they were all right. I mean, they were one of the teams that were just about good enough. And Ligier were the same towards the end. They were just about good enough to be able to grab something if everything happened to everybody else. Like Parnis winning in Monaco a few years earlier. Because that was when it was Ligier, wasn't it? It wasn't a Prost then.
I think so, yeah.
But again, it was only the fact that it was at the Nürburgring that he was able to hang on to second, because Barrichello couldn't get past him because he was so much faster. What happened to Parnis in the end? Oh, he was down in fifth. Okay, so he got points as well. So, yeah, it was a good... Yeah. Oh, no, that was qualifying. Sorry. Stupid listings.
But you see how I just agreed with you, like, yeah. I knew. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, he was fifth.
Yeah. He finished. He was ninth.
That's my entire life.
He was ninth a lap down, so he was the last of the people that
actually
finished.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
The last of the cars that actually didn't break down, because everybody else did. So, you know, they were there. They had Alain Prost. They were blue.
And they live on... The
and
team
Gitan all over the car.
But they live on... They live on in Cyril Abitbol's attitude.
Oh, I see. Okay.
In Formula One.
William Supertech. Murray kept calling him Ralphie, like this was an episode of Happy Days. But the 1999 was the year of the Red Williams, with an obviously made-up name for an engine, and there was no way another engine this year would have had a worse name. Ralph was strong for most of the race and looked set to inherit the win until a puncture fucked everything.
I tell you what, Ralph Schumacher, I think we can all agree, the best of the Schumacher brothers.
So good.
His he is now.
Amazing.
Too soon, my word. he was looking really good. Obviously no Michael at this point because he'd broken his leg earlier in the season by flattening his car into a wall at Silverstone. But yeah, Schumacher was looking really good, and I felt very sorry for him when his tyre exploded. But, you know, Stewart, Johnny Herbert, brilliant.
It's very confusing seeing A, Williams doing quite well, and B, Williams being red, because I think it was only that 1 year they had the red Winfield.
If I remember rightly, that was the first year they didn't have Rothmans, he says, now doubting himself.
Yeah, and then the following year they went to like the whole BMW Hewlett-Packardy stuff, which went back to kind of Bluey again, didn't it? So I think, or maybe not BMW, I haven't got any facts. Yeah, he came fifth, yeah, that's right. But
they were already on the downturn then, weren't they?
Well, yes and no, but this is 2 years pre-Montoya and stuff. Yeah, they've not won a championship since, but they were race winners for a good few years after this.
Yeah, but it was a bit of a dip. There was the dip between the championship years, and then there was they had Villeneuve, and then there was a dip for a few years, and then Montoya did a bit better, and then they went down, and then they had the highs of the Maldonado years. I don't think, presumably, again, I don't remember, but at the beginning of this race, I can't imagine anyone was putting money on Ralf Schumacher to win. And yet he should have done. He qualified fourth, which is actually pretty good. And he qualified an awfully long way ahead of Zanardi, who was 18th. And then his car broke after about 5 laps or something, 10 laps.
I remember Zanardi just being a bit disappointing because he'd come from either Indy or Champ Car, hadn't he? He was like the big deal and was just a bit in Formula 1.
But you can't diss him now, though, because he lost his legs and now he's an actual superhuman.
Obviously, I wouldn't.
He's a hero of a man now, but no, he wasn't a very good driver at the time.
I mean, when would I ever have a go at someone's disability?
I mean, most days, I would imagine, especially in lockdown, not much else to do. I imagine you just leaning out of your window, shouting at anyone.
And that's how I broke my back.
Yeah, well done, Ralf Schumacher. Super Tech. That's a name. We tend to remember Tag Heuer engines, modern, now going, that was a stupid idea. Why would you ever rename an engine to something else? Back in the day, they did it all the time.
Super Tech, that. I mean, regardless of what it is, that is the shittest name for anything. Super Tech.
Great.
As a kid, I loved it because as a kid, it's only one letter away from Super Tech, which was a great cartoon in the 80s. But
Super Tech. Yeah, they used it for a couple of seasons and they threw it in the trash like a piece of rubbish.
And Ralf Schumacher looks a bit like, was it Spotty? Was that his friend?
The Spotty Man, yeah.
Spotty Man. God, yeah. It was a different time, wasn't it?
Lots of creative meetings were a bit shorter back then, weren't they?
We've got to get to the pub for lunch in those days. Yeah. When pubs were
right, he's a teddy bear, right? He's got superpowers. What are we going to call him?
I miss the pub. Can we just have a moment? There's a pub near me that I really like that's been shut, obviously, for the whole time. And I looked in the window today and just thought, when the pub opens, it's going to smell really musty. It's going to be the worst thing. We're going to walk into a pub on that first day. Pubs. And it's going to be really musty.
Less of pubs, more about rebranded Renault engines.
Fine. Go on, next.
McLaren Mercedes. Häkkinen went onto wet tyres too early, screwing his race. He then sulked for the rest of it until it occurred to him that he should maybe do his job, which happened right at the end. 1999 was the year when everyone realised that David Coulthard was, at best, a bit shit. After almost doing a Senna 1993 in the wet, he ended up closer to a Senna 1994 in the wall.
You didn't write that, did you?
Who wrote that? That was fine, Chica. There's nothing wrong with that joke at all. That's a great joke.
It's a great taste. Yeah, if you watch this race and you realise that Häkkinen went on to win the championship this year, you'd be like, what? That bloke who was just half-arsing his way around at the back, not doing anything at all. This must have been one of Häkkinen's worst ever races. It was terrible.
It's staggering, isn't it? Because you look back at Mika Häkkinen as this kind of cool guy who came in, won a couple of championships and was fucking amazing. He watched this race and he crashed, and the shitty pit stop, and then he just goes, well, fuck this. That's like Alonso levels of fucking about. But Alonso would fuck about verbally but still race hard. This is the opposite. It's just like, he was going, just like, nah. I cannot be fucking bothered. What's the point?
He was,
2 tenths behind Coulthard in qualifying, so he was crap all weekend. It wasn't just because he'd had a bit of a rubbish start to the race. Although, in fairness, he did qualify third. But he had a McLaren Mercedes. That was like the fastest. They were the fastest cars that year.
David Coulthard had his moment in the rain. No.
He could have won the championship with this race. He could have taken a lead in the championship. He was doing incredibly well until the moment when he didn't. Yeah, that was his chance, wasn't it? This was a lot of people's chances, this race.
That really did feel like, because what I always remember about David Coulthard is that last year in Red Bull when he just crashed on the first corner every race. And this feels like the seminal moment when his career, he went from being a contender to a nobody.
Well,
and this was it.
To a number two driver. Maybe not a nobody. Okay. Yeah. This was his chance to win a title, and it understeered slowly off the track and pinged.
This was, on his CV, is the moment that led him down the path of being a broadcaster.
Which he's very good at. And
champion.
And a very successful businessman as well. It worked out for him. But let's mock him anyway.
Oh, I'm sure he's fine sitting in his castle, whatever he does.
Probably got a couple of them.
Jordan Mugen Honda. Damon Hill had basically given up by this point. Whilst his teammate was in the lead, he just went slow in the midfield and in the first corner, causing a nasty shunt. Heinz Harald Frentzen looked imperious in the lead for most of the race until he forgot to disable the car's anti-stall system after his pit stop and retired. How does history remember these two?
Should we start with Frentzen? Because this was his chance. This was his chance to win.
This was his Coulthard moment.
It was.
He could have been a Hakkinen, but he was a Coulthard.
He was looking so good until he forgot to turn off one of the car's systems and threw away potentially a championship. I actually completely forgot that Heinz Harald Frentzen nearly won a championship. And I just, again,
Jordan were doing really well that year, weren't they?
Yeah, and again, I just remember him as one of those, like, oh, he was there, you know. He was another driver that was in F1 for a while, but was never anything great.
And Damon Hill was having a sulk as well. It was a sulky year, isn't it? Because was Damon Hill's last year. Didn't he just not bother with the last couple of races? Didn't he just kind of go, oh, I'm done?
No, he definitely did a couple of them, but he was nowhere by this point. This was the end of it all. Because didn't he win his championship at Williams and then Williams didn't sign him the following year?
And then Williams dropped him.
Yeah.
Then he went to Arrows.
And he was at Arrows and then he ended up at Jordan and just actually had a reasonable car. But yeah, he never won a race again, did he? That was the end of that.
No, I think there was one Jordan race where he was in the lead and it went wrong at some car problem. But yeah.
Did he have his Coulthard moment? But yeah.
I don't think it was his fault. I think it was a car problem.
In terms of how history remembers them, I mean, you could argue that it all hinges on moments like this. Frentzen forgot to turn something off, and now everyone just remembers him as just a driver that was in F1 for a bit. But Hill basically grafted and grafted and won that title in 96, but then after that, never really did anything. And was never looked good enough for anyone else to think, hey, yeah, let's get Damon Hill in, you know, who had a good car. So,
well, I've been listening. Can I recommend another podcast?
What?
No.
No, it's not Missed Apex. It's The Race. .com, you know, the new website run by ex-autosport people.
The Hyphen Race.
They've got a podcast called Bring Back V10s or 12s or whatever it is. And it's all about old races. They've got this whole episode about Damon Hill going to Jordan and everything. And one of the best bits is that Damon Hill got an offer from McLaren to drive, but it was, the money was basically no money. And Dennis just went, you can have this drive, but fuck off if I'm paying you. And yeah, it's great. Anyway,
was this after his title?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
He went to McLaren and they just,
I mean, again,
went.
There you go. The fact that Ron Dennis has got the balls to say, it's like, yeah, you've won a world title, well, I'm not going to pay you. That's what I think of you.
Yeah.
I like you enough that I'll let you race one of my cars, but you'll get no money. Anyway, that's how we remember them.
Benetton Playlife. Playlife is not a name for an engine. I mean, Supertech is bad, but at least it sounds like a terrible boardroom amalgamation. Playlife. Play life. And it's written on the side of the car in weird upside-down letters, like they were too embarrassed.
Well, Playlife is the same engine, isn't it?
I've done some research on this. It's the Mecha Chrome engine, also a shit name,
What the fuck was going on?
It was a Renault engine from the previous year, built by Mechachrome, badged as Supertech, and then badged as Playlife, because Playlife is one of Benetton's line of clothing or something like that. It's basically like the AlphaTauri of its day, isn't it? Because AlphaTauri is a line of Red Bull clothing. It's almost exactly the same again.
Okay, yeah.
So, no, it's stupid. I mean, it's bad enough when they do it with teams, but to do it with engines is just, you know, I might as well start calling the engine in my Skoda, you know, oh yeah, I've got a Skoda Tommy Hilfiger. Oh no, it's a 1 litre Skoda engine, but...
But it's like the Tacura one with the Red Bull the other year. It's just like, how is this a thing?
Nobody thinks that Tag Heuer is sitting there going, right, watch, Formula One engine, watch. Nobody thinks that. Why do you... I mean, it's literally just shouting the name as you go round. You might as well just have a sort of, you know, tune the exhaust in a clever way so that as it drives past it goes, Tag Heuer! It would have the same effect. And it'd just be, you know... In fact, that would probably get you more attention because like everyone would go, ooh, that's clever, isn't it? Mm. Yeah, stupid. But who was driving for Benetton then? Wirtz and Fisichella.
Yeah, what did you think of Fisichella?
He looked young.
He did look young, didn't he? What happened?
He crashed, didn't he? Or was he... No, he was looking... Listeners, he spun off, that's right. He lost it, didn't he? He lost it at the same place where he'd made exactly the same mistake several laps previously. And then he did it again, but this time he ended up in the wall or something like that.
God.
It was that little chicane. He was coming through the chicane and he basically lost it, and then he managed to get it back and carried on. And then about four laps later, he did exactly the same thing again.
When will you learn?
He would never learn. Although he did... Fisichella, in fairness to him, is another of those drivers that had a really long career. And he did win a couple of races, didn't he? He won three races. But he was in... He's done 231 races.
Did he go to Ferrari? Really? Was that him?
Yeah, he was at Ferrari with Raikkonen.
Yeah, you see, that he's one of those drivers. This is what Sainz is going to be like. In years to come, you'll be there going, did Sainz drive for Ferrari? Like, Fisichella? No, I don't believe it.
Maybe Sainz will end up being one of those drivers that actually drove for every single team from the point where he came
He's
in.
On the way.
Exactly. Mm. Haas in a couple of years. Oh, I can see him as a Haas driver. Existed.
Ferrari. So 1999 didn't go quite according to plan for Ferrari, especially when superstar Michael Schumacher broke his leg at the British Grand Prix and had to be replaced by Mika Salo, who, bless him, is no Michael Schumacher. In fairness, neither is Eddie Irvine, who bimbled around for a while before outbreaking himself, letting Häkkinen through and then coming home with no points and basically shafting his championship chances. Salo's brakes failed, and when you combine that with some typically shambolic Ferrari pit work, it wasn't a brilliant weekend in Maranello.
It was peak Ferrari. Like, you watch this and just go, Ferrari have always been shit.
That pit and stop anything, was just... Oh, I loved it. Every second of it. And it was a lot of seconds.
Should we go through this bit by bit? This was Eddie Irvine's chance, wasn't it? This was his chance for a championship. But he Coulthard / Frentzened it. This was the race where everybody had their chance for a championship and they all chucked it away. Apart from Johnny Herbert, who went on to win several world championships.
In his head.
Yeah, Irvine wasn't great either. Ferrari weren't great. That's not a great lineup, is it? Eddie Irvine and Mika Salo. They were nothing, basically, without Schumacher.
This is the problem with the Schumacher years of hiring a really shit second driver, is when you go, hang on a minute, if our main driver's out, we've got no one. But the more you look at Ferrari's history, like from, say, mid-70s onwards, the more you have to realise that it's a series of unlikely peaks in otherwise huge troughs.
Yeah, I mean, they are the most successful team in F1 history, but not lately.
And yet, also the shittest. I don't know. It's just Ferrari have always been a bit shit. And then every few years, they're good. Or every 20 years, they're good for a couple of years. And because they've been going so long, it kind of warps the statistics a bit.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, McLaren have got the second most ever wins, and they've not won anything for, like, 20 years. But they've not been going as long as Ferrari. So, it's just a joke. That pit stop was amazing.
It was fantastic
Every
to watch.
Second of just waiting.
There should be a somebody should do a Ferrari highlights video over the year, of well low lights, let's say, and that would be in there.
Sauber Patronas. Back in the good old days, Sauber was so cheap they made roll hoops out of imagination. But Pedro Diniz did not believe enough, and he nearly had his head rubbed off by the nasty crash at the start. And also Jean Alesi, who had started his career as a giant killer.
Giant killer. it's like he was like a massive
giant killer.
Yeah.
Let me read this in my head. Hang on.
It's just one. It's one word, isn't it? That's the issue there.
Giant killer.
Giant killer.
No, giant killer.
No. Giant killer.
Oh, giant killer.
Started his career as a giant killer.
He's a killer giant.
Terry, stop it.
How do you say anteater?
Anteater.
Yeah, not anteater.
Anteater.
Giant killer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Andrea de Cesaris.
And also Jean Alesi, who had started his career as a giant killer and then a Ferrari driver during their shit years and now driving around the back for a shit team. Kimi Raikkonen, if you will.
Burn on Kimi Raikkonen, but accurate. That Diniz crash. Crikey. A sort of ooh in two parts. The first, how the hell did he flip over? Because he didn't look that fast. And then secondly, why has the roll hoop come off? It literally had one job, was to not come off. And then it came off.
Yeah, the roll hoop in a Formula One car is the one bit you want that to be bolted on. Yeah, that was shocking.
Yeah.
That was horrible.
I'm still not quite sure how he didn't have his head squashed, if I'm honest. Because when they brought that car out, it was basically just flat. It was like it was one of those old open top things where you'd rather be thrown out of it.
Yeah, it was pretty staggering.
I also liked it when they brought the sheet out to stop anyone filming, but then neglected the fact that the TV cameras were on the other side of the sheet and showing everything.
Yeah.
That was good. Classic F1. Yeah, that was
The thing is, F1 is a slick operation these days, and sometimes it's good to go back to what F1 used to be like and just go, this was kind of better. It was just a bit rubbish.
A lot more dangerous. I think, yeah, as we read out at the beginning. Like, there were several instances where there were marshals on track pushing cars around and the cars were just going around at full speed around the corner.
It didn't matter.
They had, the cranes were on the side of the track and they had guys that were just sort of standing, leaning on the cranes.
Yeah, that was fine back then.
It was just fantastic.
It wasn't dangerous back then.
Whereas now they'd be like, move.
You get a really good view from there.
What's weird is that in my head, 1999 isn't that long ago. I suppose it was 21 years previous. So if we go about the same distance from them, we were in 1978. And that seems like a long time ago. But hooray for Diniz not being decapitated. That's good. Jean Alesi, a classic, also ran now in the...
What a career. Like 1990 American Grand Prix when he was like in a Tyrrell and going against Ayrton Senna. He was going to be the next big thing. And he ended up being
not being
Jean
the next big thing. I mean, he got plenty of podiums, didn't he? But I think he only ever won one. He got 32 podiums, one win.
Oh,
that's gotta hurt. I mean, I bet he.
And he went through the teams, didn't he? Because he was Tyrrell, Ferrari. Did he do Benetton as well and Sauber? And by the way, Sauber Patronus, closer to an engine, but not an engine. That's a fucking oil company.
It's a lubricant. He's a funny one, Alesi, because he was really good, but he never bloody won, apart from once at the 95 Canadian Grand Prix. But yeah, he was on it was getting towards the end of his career at this point. He was properly Raikkonen-ing it.
Yep.
Minardi Ford. Minardi weren't very good in 1999, or indeed ever, but Luca Badoa looked set to come home in fourth at one point and was understandably very upset when his gearbox broke with a dozen laps left. Tears, guys. Real tears. Although we weren't really sure because he didn't take his helmet off, but we'll go with that.
I mean, he was.
That was Luca's chance to score F1 points for the first time ever, and he'd never get the chance again. Luckily for the Minardi team, Marc Genet was there to take sixth and a single world championship and a single world championship point because they were very stingy with them back then. It would only be 1 point Minardi would score all season. Still better than BAR.
This was Badoa's chance, wasn't it? This was his one chance. Oh.
And it wasn't his fault. It reminds me of, I think it was Adrian Sutil in Monaco driving for Force India, was fourth, and Kimi Raikkonen crashed into the back of him. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
It wasn't his fault. He was going to get this amazing finish. Maybe it was even third. Was it Sutil on the podium? Can't remember. But for Badoa, it wasn't his fault. We've had all the other drivers we talked about fucking up, and this was, he was there to capitalize, and his car fucked up, but it wasn't his fault. And it's the saddest thing you'll ever see. That few moments when the car stopped, that was like the opening of Up.
Yeah.
That could be a Pixar film. Just seemed to last just a Luca lifetime. Badoa getting out of his car and crying.
I felt very bad for him. But yeah, he'd never get the chance to score a point again. That was the end of it. That was the highlight of his F1 career. Should we send him an award? Terry's point of my heart.
He was a Ferrari test driver, and when he retired, he was replaced by Jules Bianchi.
Yes, he was. Didn't he do a race relatively recently? I mean, not the last couple of years.
Hang on.
But wasn't there somebody out? Didn't Badoa come in and just be absolutely shit in a Ferrari, like way off the pace? Maybe
yes,
10
it was.
Years or
no,
so ago.
I've got the. Yeah, I've got the page open. It was when Barrichello had the spring Massa. In his face. Oh, no, yeah, sorry, I'm reading the Wikipedia. When Massa had the spring in his face because it fell from Barrichello's car.
That's right.
You can tell I've just read the wrong line on his website. But I say it with such confidence that it's believable. Yeah, so that was then. That was when Badoa came back to Formula One and was terrible.
Was that quite a long time ago?
It was 1999 Japanese Grand Prix. Oh, no, hang on. No, that's
no,
not
it wasn't.
Right. No, I'm reading the wrong lines.
Not reading the wrong lines.
He was 1.9 seconds off Raikkonen in the 2009 European Grand Prix. He qualified 20th and last, and he was slower than the Toro Rosso driver, and
that's right.
He didn't do very well.
Was that really 2000? That was 11 years ago. If you'd have asked me that, I'd have said, yeah, that was like 4 or 5 years ago.
Ugh, oh, we're old, Phil.
We are. Anyway.
BAR came to the sport in 99 buying the Tyrrell team and is now Mercedes. But they had promised to win a race in their opening year, and here near the end of the season, they hadn't even scored a point in their weird jewel-liveried cars.
Do you remember when BAR launched with their liveries? Because originally, at the unveil, they had one car in the 555 livery, a blue one with yellow, and they had one car with Lucky Strike livery. And then with not that long before the season started, F1 basically said, no, you can't do that. So their solution was to basically just combine the two liveries and have one side on one and one side on the other, which I think is brilliant, and I think more people should do it.
I remember the only time it looked good was when one of the cars span, and it was like two cars spinning, because every time it went round, you're like, what car? Oh.
Because that 555 livery particularly looked really good, because it was also the livery that they had on WRC rally cars at the time, on the Imprezas, and they looked amazing.
But BAR were shit. They were shit. And they came in saying they're going to win a race in their first... It was a bit like Haas, you know. It was just this kind of bravado, we're going to do well, and it was embarrassing. And they didn't even score a point. Did they even score a point
in
their first year?
They didn't score any points that season at all, no.
What a joke.
Yeah, they were absolutely shite.
And don't forget, Villeneuve had left Williams to go there, hadn't he?
So I'm trying to remember what the circumstances were about that.
Left. Yeah, left might be a loaded word.
Because was it another Alonso thing when nobody liked him? Was that what happened? I can't remember now.
Yeah, no, nobody really liked Jack Villeneuve.
And then, of course, they had Ricardo Zonta, who we all remember.
Vaguely.
I mean, I remember that he had a name beginning with a Z, but I remember very little about him. Yeah, they were terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Finally, Arrows. Every year needed a team with no interesting points. 1999 had Arrows.
Yep.
And now it's time for the State of F1 with Terry Saunders.
Okay, so I've done another State of F1 about the race in question, the 1999 European Grand Prix, and get ready. Are you sitting down? I think you should be sitting down for this. If you're driving, pause this, pull over, crack the window open a bit, and then get ready. You ready? I think Murray Walker was a bit shit. I didn't at the time, don't get me wrong. I loved him as much as we all did. And yes, I know that slagging off a high-risk 96-year-old man during the pandemic just a week or two after losing Sir Stirling Moss is risky at best, but hear me out. In the 1999 Grand Prix we've just been watching, I think it's fair to say he wasn't at his best. It's not just the mistakes and the not knowing who is who, and almost any time there's a 50-50 guess of which car from which team the camera's focused on, he'd get it wrong. But he also came across as a bit rude. He'd always talk over Brundle, who was a bit posher back then, to interrupt genuine insight with some doddering, incorrect exclamation. This was 2 years before his retirement, and I do remember a general sense that maybe he was past his best by then. But what felt fun and charming in today's era of hyper-professionalisation felt, but a bit shoddy and shit. We all wanted old races, and now we've got them, there are twofold problems. One is that the cherry-picked ones we are watching are better than normal current races, but maybe not good races, but also that it's challenging some of the things we do remember. It's weird when we're being told to wash our hands and not look at people, to see roll hoops failing, JCBs on track, crash cars littering the races, and Murray Walker showing us if we go back to the past, sometimes it's weird, sad, and a little bit creepy. The way he kept calling Ralph Schumacher Ralphie, that was weird. But don't worry, I have a solution. Remember when Murray Walker did the commentary for the old Formula One games on the PlayStation? He'd recorded about 10 lines that would get repeated again and again until it drove you mad. Well, I think we should replace all of his old commentary from the races in 1999 with those 10 lines, and then it will be fine, because it will be nostalgic. Don't worry about it.
So you're saying we should just have like a Murray Walker soundboard with just some of his greatest phrases and just...
And here he is!
That was the State of F1, brought to you this season, whenever it starts, by Carfection. Terry, can you give us an update?
Well, we're doing some videos with Carfection about the State of F1, and it's been a bit troubled by the pandemic. But it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Don't worry about it. It's going to happen. It'll be fine. You'll see me on your screen soon. Without a beard. Fuck, I've shaved the beard off just as I'm going to do some filming. That means I've got to keep it off. Oh, fuck.
That isn't from us. It is goodbye to Phil Tromans.
Goodbye. We haven't had time to talk about Lewis Hamilton and the fact that we're not going to see him playing video games because he does not care about esports.
And to Terry Saunders, who has become a fan of someone.
What we haven't had time to talk about is the fact that, look, I'm not saying I like esports, because I don't. I've watched a couple more races and I think they're shit. But I've become quite hooked on Jimmy Broadbent.
He's good Japanese.
I like him. I've been watching his videos and I've realised what I don't like watching the eSport races where you're just watching the cameras go around. But watching him driving around, I like it. I've become a fan. I've watched a lot of his stuff.
In his shed, watching his feet.
Yeah.
Do you think you've learned a few things about how to drive? Could we get you back on the F1 game once lockdown's over? Long-time listeners may remember. I think didn't we post a video of you driving around Monaco?
And we did try video content once.
One corner in and then binned it into a wall.
In my defence, I was pissed and really bad at it.
So we'll be back at some point to discuss something. In the meantime... Check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/ForF1's Sake, and follow us on Twitter @ForF1's Sake. You can buy some stuff.
You actually can buy some stuff because we've updated the shop. So if you go to ff1s.com/shop, you will find new designs of old designs, but copyright, better for copyright because they haven't got the logos on, and some new stuff, which I can't recall. It's really good though.
I'm scrolling through now and...
That's the man of the match, the driving shirt. Stuff. I'm soft. Oh, hilarious tyre-based t-shirt jokes.
You can buy a t-shirt that says I'm soft, I'm hard, or I'm wet. I decided this time not to make I'm medium or I'm intermediate because they're not as funny.
That's what I mean, if people want to buy the whole set. Although, of course, with the new Pirelli rules, you don't get a choice of which t-shirt you get. We just send you a t-shirt and you have to lump it.
Thanks for listening. See you soon. Ivan Ukraz. Goodbye.
Bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.